I think we're there. So good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're enjoying your stay here at beautiful Long Beach. I don't know what you're doing here. If it was you, I have to be here, but you could be over there. It's a lot nicer. I want to acknowledge my co-author, Armin Kimanian, from Penn State. Let me get started here. Okay. A lot of conversations yesterday during ACMET meetings. Heard a lot this morning, today. Well, how complicated is all of this? And there are so many little wrinkles, interactions, detail from this spot to the next spot that we feel at times that we need to throw our hands and say, forget it. And that's kind of the feeling when you see, Ken is not here right now, but he was presenting all these different models that don't seem to agree. But as you probably have seen some of the latest paper, when you take the average of all of them, things are a lot better. So that's not very encouraging, actually. But that's what we're finding. So, and many of these models have a lot of detail in how to get things done, how things grow. And one issue that I think is general all over is the lack of balance many times on crop models, because we have a soil element, we have a crop element, we have the atmosphere, and there's a continuum there. And many times, depending on where is the strength of the group developing the model, they may put a lot of attention to maybe the plant, but they're not that familiar or even interested in, let's say, the soil. And you find that many models today are using, for example, a dipping bucket approach where you cascade water down to an upper limit every time you have a rainfall or irrigation. That can work in many conditions, but not always. In fact, the assumption that soils get into this upper lever limit of, you know, negligible drainage in 24 hours or even 2 days, and many soils where it may take 5, 10, and even 20 days to get there. And that makes a little bit of a difference when you start considering the soil in relation to water availability, for example. So I'm going to talk about how nice it is to do things in a simpler way, okay? And this is not just simply a way to say, well, maybe there is a way out here. If we simplify, we kind of don't pay much attention to the wrinkles, and maybe we can have a better life. Point is that when you scale up, many of the questions that we have today coming to us from society, from politicians, from all kinds of places, are really a more integrated type. And we cannot really get to answers where we say, well, give us another X millions of dollars and another 50 years and we'll get there, okay? We've been doing this for a long, long time. And just the previous speaker saw the amazing amount of different ways to actually measure or estimate ET, for example. So there are many things we know, and we know the main things, let's put it that way. We don't know the details of things very well. The good news, though, is that we look at these higher integrated levels. Those details don't really matter much if you capture the main responses. We're doing here special analysis where we're looking at best maybe 4 by 4 kilometers, you know, pieces of land in a grid. So, you know how much detail there is in this 4 by 4 kilometers? And many, many of these approximations, or this type of projects, rather, use 6, 10, and even 60 by 60 kilometers to cover the entire planet. So some of those grids actually end up in the Atlantic, so I don't know what you do there. But the point is that there's so much variation inside that we're ignoring completely, and we're worried about little details in how a point in the field compared to the next one will differ, and how to capture that. It's okay to try to learn, because that's when we learn, and we may, you know, we may find some things there that could be useful. But let's not get paralyzed by that. And what I'm suggesting is that let's look at more as sort of an engineering approach to this. You know, engineers in that sense, they always say, well, good enough for practical purposes, right? If I get an answer that's more or less on the bulk and allow me to, you know, keep moving, well, maybe that's really good. So we start from a simple idea. It's been around for many, many years, where you can approximate evaporation from leaves using a combination of conductances and a gradient, right? And in the end, you have a combined conductance multiplied by the vapor pressure deficit. That's what that D is there, as a way to approximate evaporation from leaves. In terms of photosynthesis, you can look at supply N, which would be the top equation, the supply of CO2 to the sites of carboxylation, or you can look at the demand, which would be the bottom one. And there are ways to simplify the things that you see toward the right there. And then the issue is how you combine these things, and you can do this if you go back to what already was known by 1977. You can look at this supply and demand from a stomatal optimization viewpoint. And there's quite a bit of derivation to go to this, where essentially the water use efficiency, or transpiration use efficiency is probably a better term, it has this type of approximated estimation. And the interesting thing there is there is a relationship to the square of the inverse of the square of the vapor pressure deficit. Also, you can see that the water use efficiency is, in general, correlated to the increase in atmospheric CO2. And in a recent paper by Vico, they have shown also with similar derivations that stomatal conductance is proportional to the inverse of the atmospheric CO2 concentration. And there are evidence scaling up this kind of concept that this can be observed, actually, in experiments. We have this one we have for wheat and maize, this relationship that Ken was talking about this earlier today. And the big squares there in both sides are seasonal values of wheat biomass and seasonal transpiration. Okay, so it's highly integrated value. Different cultivars of wheat, different locations, so you see the spread there. Same in the case of maize. The little dots come from a kind of a transpiration photosynthesis model that we have, that we can run hourly things, and these dots are essentially daily values. And this is using weather data from like 10 different locations to have really a spread of daytime vapor pressure deficit. And the interesting thing is that it comes with a relationship to the vapor pressure deficit that's around that 0.5 that we're talking about from theory. This relationship can also be easily parameterized with simple experiments where you measure the evolution of above ground biomass and you measure the evolution of the canopy interception of solar radiation. And then you need to have an approximation of ET base and some form of, I prefer to use a Penman-Teeth approximation for this. And with that, you can essentially parameterize the value of K. So that's another way to look at that. Canopy conductance. this relationship has also been evaluated for a long time. The green sort of straight line, in fact, that you see there was developed by Morrison and Gifford. And it's been used in a number of models. I used to use that as well. Other models have used that relationship. And the problem is that it's only good up to 660 ppm and doesn't describe anything. You cannot extrapolate. In fact, it's not a linear extrapolation. You cannot continue that way. So the rest of the lines that you see there come from a paper by Allen in 1990 that he actually measured in the field this response of canopy conductance to CO2. And you see the kind of relationship there. Now, the interesting thing is that that simple relationship of the inverse of the concentration of CO2 with some scaling factor, in this case 0.8 for soybean, come pretty close to what Allen measured. And for corn, for his measurement, I use a value of 0.9. So I don't know, 0.8, 0.9, but this is a venue where you can actually parameterize these things with a quite simple expression. And then the issue is, what do we do with that characterization of canopy conductance response in relation to changes in crop transpiration? So again, we revert to Pema Montith. We take a ratio of a situation where there is no effect of CO2, an effect where the CO2 effect is included. Take the ratio of the two, and you get a factor there that allows you to correct for transpiration as a function of CO2. And this is actually very dependent on wind speed and the aerodynamic resistance, actually. And so you see the numbers may change. So this calculation is done on a daily basis, in fact. You've seen that before. It's possible to characterize in this case, the seed yield biomass is very similar. It is presented in relative terms here. So one would be a value at a given point where we started the measurement and then see the relative change as a function of concentration. This is also from a paper from Allen et al. I think Ken is author of that too. So that kind of relationship can be obtained now. So this is library, so it takes time to do something like this. We have experiments we have been discussed today on, not in this session, other sessions, you know, phase experiments or open top type of chambers where we get a value at an ambient temperature and then an elevated CO2 concentration. So we know what changes in biomass, and there are some data points of that nature. So that's what you got, what you do with that. So you can approximate that using a non-rectangular hyperbola, where you use the value of an ambient as 1, then whatever value, 1.2, whatever it is, at some elevated CO2. And then you know that there will be a saturation here, as you can already see in that curve. That curve actually doesn't fit that data as well as a non-rectangular hyperbola. But you see that you really start getting to a saturation point, and so CO2 is no longer providing any advantage. So what you see there, that expression. So you can take some data from different people has policies for wheat, and I put it all together there so you can have a sense of how the things may change. So sure, there are some changes depending who you agree would be a better experiment for you to utilize, but the trend is clear. It's something you can use in this kind of really high integrated type of analysis. And finally, you combine the things, and so you have a gain of biomass given a delta CO2, and you have a transpiration on a based on a baseline equation, and then you can change that by this factor that also depends on the delta CO2, and you have a water use efficiency that you can be using as you go along in your calculation day by day and year by year. And you ended up then with a water use efficiency that looks like this, and very proportional. When you cross a point of CO2 where it's starting not to be a limiting factor, and you see a pretty linear relationship at that point. That's what you get, at least with these simple approximations that I'm using. So, in conclusion, there is theory now. We can demonstrate that from theory and evidence as well, that points to a relationship of water use efficiency to the inverse of the square root of vapor pressure deficit. Similarly, the stomatal conductance decreases as inverse relationship to the CO2 concentration. You can put these pieces all together within a framework as a Pema-Montesquieu equation, for example, and coupling this with some knowledge of the fraction of canopy interception of solar radiation, and then the harvest index, you can use similar processes like this, and you can have a way to make predictions. In fact, this is very easy to adapt to where was talking about satellite data on transpiration, for example, coming from metric, and you can adapt some of these concepts to determine biomass or yield as well. And with that, I think I'm done with it.
Thank you, Dr. Skartl. Questions? We have time for one quick question.
There's one at the back.
With this approach about the rapid transpiration, how would you account for the differences between the varieties that you have in terms of probability of age and start system compared to the conventional design? How would you account for that?
Okay, let's address that, because this typical kind of question that you start thinking about the things, and that's just the beginning. How do you account then for the next thing and the next things? Certainly, it all depends what you're doing. If you're interested in a particular cultivar in a particular region, maybe you focus on getting parameters for something like that with some more precision, okay? But when you work and evaluate and make assessment at large scales, we always tend to believe that what matters is that we represent each point in the field, each cultivar, each crop, everything as it is in the real world. And that's not possible. What you're doing is you're creating a system that mimics reality, and you see how it behaves as you change conditions. And that's all what you're after, is to say, this is the kind of change that makes sense. And this is the kind of change that gives you an idea of what kind of policies or management or decisions you need to make to adapt or try to modify that course. It doesn't represent anybody, any cultivar, anything in a piece of land in the real world. It's not intended to do that. It's a system analysis, where you look at how the system reacts given certain changes. And that needs to be represented at least in a credible, and what I have shown today, I can defend this versus very, very sophisticated models. I don't think they will be better predicted, and they still have exactly the same problem of this scaling up. So.
Okay, we'll take quickly one more question.
I'd like to draw idea of the question for Harris, but my concern is that keeping you scope for regional models, that we have to have some kind of validated data, and then in that case, it's going to be very difficult to get some measurement of ET or other things that represent the region. So how do you think that you can get, some kind of measurement over large areas? Have you any thought about that?
Yeah, well, again, I think I won't repeat what I just said, but I mean, you're lucky if you can have a few points where you feel you know, have some confidence there. But once you are out there, who knows?
Yeah, the lesser the details, the better the life is. So, that's to wind up. Thank you, Dr. Claudio. So,